to get started off. We've talked a little bit about this bill, and it sounds like we'll be talking about it more, SB 129, which Senator Giesel did introduce. Medicare was set up to figure out a way for the government to fend and to actually pay for elderly care as well as disabled care. There are actually no codes for things like psychiatric care. There's very few codes for things like children care. So we want to talk about how we base that. We need to really think carefully about that, and we can talk about that more later. But I just wanted to first kind of start off by telling you a story. I was working in the emergency department the other night, and I was evaluating this man who thought he was having a heart attack because he was having chest pain, and there was a little child there with a temperature of 105 eating a popsicle. Their worried parents and a milieu of other people, including the 9 other psychiatric patients waiting a week or more to be transferred to a psychiatric hospital, much like the 9 that are sitting in our emergency department today, and one more that I got called about on the way in here. We got a frantic call from EMS. A child had drowned in the bathtub, and that child's heartbeat had stopped. They got it back, but she was seizing. And in comes this beautiful girl. She was small and frail, and she had these perfect little curls, and she was also seizing and vomiting and blue. And the team went into action, stabilized her, arranged for a helicopter, and transferred her. With this sinking feeling, I knew that things might not go well because I know our system. She was transferred to Anchorage, a hospital that did everything to care for her, but they didn't have one key piece of equipment. It's called an ECMO machine that replaces your heart and lungs when needed. This patient was barely transferred to Seattle and barely made it there. Still today, she's fighting for her life. Over the last 30 years in Alaska, we've made great strides in our ability to recruit physicians and build a healthcare network in Alaska. But this work is not done. We still have no cardiologists in our capital, no burn unit in our state. We've only recently established a trauma system for non-Native patients. When I share with my colleagues in the lower 48 what I do here on a regular basis, they're in disbelief. One friend came and after 6 months left for a salary half the price because of his difficulty trying to get care for patients in the emergency department. The healthcare system in Alaska is fragile, and it will cost more if we destroy what we've created. Just one flight company in 2017 had 150 transfers last year out of state because patients had life-threatening conditions that the state could not provide any services for. That's $15 million to transfer these patients, not to care for them, and that doesn't even take into account the interstate transfers like that one that we used to transfer that beautiful girl to Anchorage. But these are not the stories we hear. You read about this obscure rule causing high healthcare costs. At this forum, we've been told that we're the only state that has the 80th percentile rule, and that's what makes Alaska high healthcare costs. On NPR just this afternoon, it was stated that other states have repealed the 80th percentile rule. None of that is true. I'm not defending all physician bills and practices in Alaska. In any industry, you can find people with bad actors. But I do believe that there are ways that this legislation and others, you've only been told part of the story. Instead, the insurance companies have systematically and intentionally misled you. They have changed the story of cost of care and blamed it on the 80th percentile rule and physicians. They are using your justified anger for high health care costs as a checkmate to control every aspect of health care delivery for their benefit. They may not have, they mentioned today, but may not have mentioned previously, that they helped create the 80th percentile rule in 2004 as a patient protection issue. But they are doing double talk. They tell us in Alaska we need to get rid of it, but on other Premera websites across the country, they list it as a website saying that this is good practice. They might have forgotten to mention that the 80th percentile rule is now law in New York and Connecticut, has been for years, and there's no evidence that it's increased charges of physicians' fees in those states since it went into place or healthcare costs. They didn't tell you that the National Conference on Insurance Legislators, a bipartisan group of insurance commissioners fighting for patients' rights across the country, tasked with finding model legislation, listed the 80th percentile rule as the benchmark that should be used across the country for usual and customary reasonable rates, and that they should use a fair, independent database such as Fair Health to find those dates. They forgot to mention that emergency services billed in Alaska are the same or even less than Seattle. For very sick, complex patients seen in an emergency department in Anchorage, that runs you $1,021, while in Seattle, that's $1,129. In New Orleans, with significantly less healthcare costs, that same charge runs you $1,924. What they tell you, and they tell our legislators, is what they pay out. They don't tell you the rest of the cost gets transferred to the patient. And I don't know about you, but I buy insurance to cover me, my family of 2 healthy kids and a healthy husband, and expect the over $25,000 that I personally pay in health insurance every year and the $10,000 deductible covers me when I have an emergency. They don't tell you that they buy insurance and that 5% of that goes to broker's fees. That isn't actually producing anything that helps your patient with health care. Have they shown you the graphs from the Kaiser Foundation where the cost of healthcare started to climb way before 2004 when the 80th percentile rule went into effect, and that healthcare cost climb did not change one bit once that rule went into effect. Have they explained to you, because I cannot make the math work, how physician salaries are to blame for 15 to 20% yearly premium increases when physician reimbursements only make up 20% of the healthcare spending, and half of that we spend on malpractice, often staff and billing companies, and physician reimbursement has gone up 3 to 4%. The math does not work out. And how about the $38 million profit they brought in last year with the 80th percentile rule still in place? $25 million of it they gave to the state to offset their future costs. I know the reason for they know the reason for high healthcare costs. They talked about it in 2014 and 2015 when they wanted Alaska and the federal government to help take the cost of their most costly patients, which they successfully achieved. In 2015, they said 1% of the pool generated a quarter of their medical claims. They stated that $11 million were generated by 33 individuals in the state. Instead, they've been talking to social groups and welding associations and working a full-time grassroots movement to drive a wedge between patients and physicians and blaming us for the costs. Meanwhile, your doctor was at work sharing the good news of a cancer that's in remission, or dealing with a black eye from getting punched by a psychiatric patient, or maybe they're at the office right now filling out another insurance claim to justify the medication that you actually need. And now we have a bill, SB 129, being sold as a solution to high healthcare costs and a repeal of the 80th percentile rule. A bill that only covers emergency services and is not a full repeal of the 80th percentile. The emergency department is the only place federally mandated to see every patient every time of day. We are 2% of the physicians, we are 4% of the healthcare costs, and we deliver 50% of the entire healthcare in this country and treat over 60% of the uninsured. A place that 60% of our charges are never paid, a place that cares for this beautiful girl when her life depended on it. This bill will end emergency care as we know it in the state. It will let government and insurance companies decide how much your life is worth in an emergency when you need it the most. We will lose doctors, we may lose hospitals, and it will be the rural ones first. This bill locks us in on all sides. We have to see everyone, and reimbursement will drop to that cost. Even though people say it's the bottom, there will be no way to negotiate above that. And I worry that our costs will actually go up as we transfer more patients, lose skilled workers in rural health care, and people will die, not because we can't care for them, but because we don't have a system to do so. I'm not defending the 80th percentile rule for my salary, I'm defending it for my patients. And I'm defending it for you. When you drive home tonight and the black ice catches you on your way, or in the early morning when the house shakes and a tsunami warning goes off, and for that beautiful girl whose life depended on a system she and her family knew nothing about, working for them when they needed it the most. So tell your legislators no in SB 129, stop being distracted by this 80th percentile rule. We're happy to talk about ways to make it better, and let's get back to actually driving down healthcare costs, improving healthcare for all, and putting the patient first.
All right, what we'd like to do now is open up the panel for questions to, and anybody can ask, anybody about this particular issue, the 80th percentile rule. Does anyone have any questions?
Well, I do. So my question would be, for those providers that are charging above the 80th percentile, do you think it's fair to push the additional costs onto the consumer?
No, I don't. I think that we should be able to look at kind of what that looks like. So it's hard to say what's
fair.
So
would you be in favor of a balanced billing legislation that said any charges above the 80th percentile would be null and void?
So we testified to Lori last year that emergency services would be willing to support a ban on balanced
billing. I'm talking about more than emergency services.
I can't speak for every physician in the state. But we came across and stated, as emergency physicians in this state, that we felt like the 80th percentile with a ban on balanced billing was a reasonable rate to go.
Okay.
Is it fair, while we're on that topic, to discuss how the 80th percentile rule affects different physicians and hospitals differently? I think there's a tendency to lump everything together, and my suspicion is that's not necessarily true.
Aren't you with, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are, doctor.
I'm Ann.
I know, but who do you represent? What physician's office do you work with?
So I'm an emergency physician. I practice at Mattsu Regional Emergency Department.
Okay. Are you in network with any?
We are in network with almost everyone. We've been in network since we've been established as a group. And in fact, most emergency department contracts either require or highly incentivize you to be in network.
So that's really the... the crux of the issue is really the 80th percentile is a mute point for you all because you're in network and you're receiving a negotiated rate anyways.
I would also argue
that the 80th percentile has raised the watermark for all physician services costs in Alaska. But really, when you're in network, your balance billing doesn't really matter because your patients don't see a balance billing piece because you have a negotiated rate that the insurance company is going to pay for anyways.
Because what keeps us in network is that you're paying a reasonable rate for out of network. So if the out of network minimum goes down to 200% of Medicare, we cannot balance bill and we have to see every patient. It's like a great checkmate. There's no way that I have any contract negotiation power with any insurance company. We're already seeing that in Oregon, we're seeing it in Texas, where they said there's no balance bill, we're gonna decrease your in-contract rate by 25% each year until it's down to 200% of Medicare or some sort of other set of arbitrary benchmark.
What if the state government and the federal government, if they increased their reimbursement rate, would you be willing to look at lowering the 80th percentile or moving towards reference-based pricing?
Our state that doesn't have any money right now?
Well, they don't have any money right now. Doesn't mean they won't have in the future.
I'm talking about reality here, and then we have to take care of our patients right
well,
now.
I understand that. I'm talking about reality as well. When you're looking at someone like myself who's had about $1 million in claims in the past 3 years, about that, I've had about over $10,000 in balance billing costs shifted to myself, even though we pay outrageous amount of money for health insurance, and I'm double covered as well. And when I ask, will you please write this off, they tell me, oh, sure. And then the next month, they just continue to bill it as it is. Or they say, no, we'll take Visa, MasterCard, or Discover. I'm not saying that it's the emergency room doctors, but there are physicians that are here in Alaska that don't take a fair stance like you're taking.
So as I mentioned, I can't defend all billing practices in the state, and I'd recommend you know, we can talk about those, and we've never had a conversation about
We need people like you to start putting pressure on those physicians that are really the only physicians doing a certain service in Alaska to start bringing down their prices or working with individuals on balanced billing, because the average Alaskan doesn't have $1,000 in their bank account, and they already have a $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 deductible, a $7,000 out of pocket, and then they're being asked to front another couple thousand dollars in balance billing. I'm not saying it's you, but I'm saying there are physicians out there that are doing that. I've sat in an office with a doctor that said, I'll accept Visa, MasterCard, or Discover. We do not write off any balance billing. So that's happening out there, and it's due to the 80th percentile. It has raised the watermark for costs in Alaska.
This one could go on for a long time.
I know.
I think we want to be careful about individual situations, mm-hmm. and just like we want to be careful about lumping all physicians together. Thea, did you have a question?
I'll let Julie go first.
Thank you. Yes, I actually do have a question. Actually, I have two. First of all, are you familiar with the movement afoot across the community of physicians that are going in network at rapid speed?
You bet.
So with that said, are you also familiar with the number of patients what you're describing actually impacts? So let me back up. Of our 740,000 people in the state, only about 220,000 of them have real insurance, right?
Right.
And about half of that are self-insured, right? So
right.
You take another 110,000 people that are in that category. That would fall
self-insured still can be on the 80th percentile as well.
That we could possibly even remotely, and of that,
there's not a lot of reference-based pricing in Alaska at this point.
That's not my point. My point is that the number of people that are actually in the category that you're describing is relatively small, and that's what leaves it even in a more challenging situation, because the cost of health care ends up being on the shoulders of the ones that have the managed care. And when you look at Medicare, Medicaid, all the governmental payers, they are upside down.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, how do you neutralize that while being able to support the supply and demand needs that are up here in the state, as Dr. Zink is saying? So I guess I just want to put a little perspective around it, because I do believe that there is movement afoot, and I do see providers coming in network. And there's a difference between balance bill and your copay. My copay on my insurance is $5,000. I'm used to having to write a check for that. And if you only had to write $10,000 on $1 million, you got a good deal. So it's there's a really big difference between what your out-of-pocket is on a balance bill versus what your expectation.
I think I did explain that with deductible and out-of-pocket and then balance billing.
I only heard you say balance bill.
Oh, yeah. But the problem is that self-insured plans also, I wrote them myself, were hitched to the 80th percentile. And so they still are out there. And you can't just take those out for the self-insured plans because it doesn't necessarily mean that they're paying fairly or that their members aren't receiving any balance billing coming to them. The problem is that a lot of these private payers, whether it's self-insured or fully insured, is that all the cost of care, of the all these services that we're bringing up to Alaska are on the backs of those payers. And so why is it fair for private payers to be shouldering the cost of bringing up all these subspecialties, all these great, wonderful machines? Trust me, I just had children myself. I want them to have the best care here in Alaska. Myself, I want to have the best care here in Alaska. But we have to step back and think, okay, the emotional stories are great, but you sort of have to decouple from that because.
But under this are people. I
fully understand that. But unfortunately, what you're also asking is for more and more of employees, employers, and individuals in this state to pay for these types of services.
Albert, has there ever been a study that showed 80th percentile is causing the cost of high health care in Alaska?
Well, I have.
No, there is not.
I mean,
there's Primera
here's,
data
no,
that
mean,
looks at what they're paying out.
This is the 80th percentile that the state of Alaska did about 5 years ago.
Have
and
we
I'll
ever had a conversation about the 80th percentile with insurers and with the state to talk about how we can change this legislation and providers? We never have.
Well, because
instead, we bring it on the radio.
Whenever we have a conversation, it's the AMA points fingers at the insurance company, and the insurance company points fingers at the AMA or physicians.
The AMA really is in the state. You just met me. I've been at more meetings on healthcare than you can even count, and we've been part of this conversation for years. We have fought hard in the state to reduce healthcare costs. We introduced the 7 best practices in the state, reducing costs in Washington State by $33.6 million, decreasing ED visits by 10.1%, and decreasing narcotics. That's at our cost. We're losing those patients because it's the right thing to do for patients.
In Washington?
We have that happened in Washington. We got it passed as part of SB 74 here in Alaska 2 years ago.
What about Alaska?
We got it passed here in Alaska in 2 years ago as part of SB 74, as part of the Medicaid redesign. We've been an active part in trying to find healthcare solutions for our community. We have started high utilizer programs to save you money, as well as to save the private insurers and to save Medicare and Medicaid money on these frequent utilizers without any reimbursement from Medicare, without any reimbursement from Medicaid, and without any reimbursement from the private insurance because it's the right thing to do for patients. We're actively involved in this, and instead we're using media and we're using high emotional stakes to talk about the high healthcare cost and totally attributing two things that don't go together.
All right, let's stop there. I want to remind everybody, I don't think I really made it point. If you have questions, get a 3x5 card, fill it out. The second half of this part of this discussion is going to depend on your questions. Ms. Bimbin, you had a question?
I can just defer to the audience, it's okay.
Well, they're next.
They're next, okay, cool.
You guys get the first 20 minutes.
I'm going back to what you pointed to and also what I think and you clarified, which is that the bill that's being proposed is focused on the emergency room. No. Is that correct?
No,
it's not correct.
That's Jason Gren's bill.
No.
Jason's Gren bill focuses on ER, and Kathy Giesel's focuses purely on just balance billing, period.
That's correct.
I'll bring up the legislation.
Okay. I guess my question is really about what kind of exploration, I guess it's really the question Anne's raised. In my experience, there hasn't actually been any public discourse about the 80th percentile rule. There was a hearing last January that was, I think, one day. It was like January 4th, or it was early in the year. And the Division of Insurance took testimony. And then subsequently, Lori Wing-Hire, I believe, shared that she wasn't in favor of changing the regulation without some discussion around the impact to consumers. So I guess I'm kind of still on that question of, have we really explored, as Anne's pointing out, whether the 80th percentile, whether and how the 80th percentile rule is connected to our healthcare costs. And I guess I just also want to go back to what Dr. Witter was saying, because I totally understand that when you have a specialty that kind of controls its market, they have the kind of market power that you described because of that rule. And I'm pretty convinced that for some specialties, it absolutely drives the price way high. And we hear all the time about procedural specialties where that's the case. And I totally agree that that's probably one of many drivers
of
our
many
healthcare costs. But is the blanket repeal going to change that plus create a whole bunch of other problems? I mean, it just seems like a little
bit. But I think that's why we're having a good conversation here today, is because there hasn't been one when Lori basically took testimony and then came out and said, this is it.
Well, it seems like there needs to be that. And, and this is probably not the only time to do it.
So I have the bill right here from the legislative website, SB 129 by Senator Geisel, because the Gren bill has not been dropped. An act relating to emergency services and balance billing related to the determination of an insurer on final payment for a covered service or supply, and annulling regulations relating to determining the insurer for final payment for coded services or supply based on geographic area.
So it's refers to the emergency services specifically.
I think here's that might bill. Be an older bill.
This is from their website today.
I get that. No.
I'm not a legislator. I'm not there all the time keeping up on this, but this is what the website says today.
I'm pretty sure from everything that Kathy Geisel has presented that her intent in that legislation is to repeal all of the 80 percentile rule.
But that's not how it reads, nor how national people are reading it.
Well, I think that that's an older version that's on the website, because I've been in I understand.
So how are we as individuals and providers supposed to know what's being decided about our entire future if when I go to the state website, it's an old bill? Like, I literally just looked up on the website the actual bill. I mean, I'm a full-time physician trying to care for my family and kids. I am not a biller. I'm not insured.
You're not the only one out there, so I don't know why you're yelling at me about this, you know?
Sorry, I'm just really, I'm frustrated that this system is making a bill out there.
But do you understand, like, I think what it is that when we have this conversation with physicians, not just you, but with many different physicians, is that it sort of feels to consumers and to people in the industry that, A, you start blaming the insurance companies, and B, it kind of falls on deaf ears. And especially when I felt it myself about when physician offices tell you, you either take this or we're not going to see you, or you can pay via credit card or pay us $5 a month. We don't care, we're not writing off the bills. And yes, some have written off the charges, I've heard that, but some offices are afraid to talk about how they do write off charges because they're afraid of the blowback from other physicians in their subspecialty. And I also want
60% of my care does not get reimbursed.
I understand your care, but emergency room, I don't want to blanket services. I don't want to blanket every single physician. We're talking about subspecialties that really have a corner on this market.
Well, then it seems like the legislation or dialogue or analysis needs to parse that out.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Here is a question that comes from the audience, and it revolves around EMTALA, and I suspect a lot of individuals may not understand EMTALA. It says, EMTALA question, might discontinue, place more power in the hands of emergency room doctors to control throughput. So anybody who wants to can answer this. Anne, I suspect you may be best. Explain why EMTALA exists and what the intent of that rule is.
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, and I don't think it's explained enough, and I appreciate whoever put that out there. So basically, EMTALA was a law that was passed in 1984, and it was considered an anti-dumping bill. So what would happen is a patient would show up at a hospital with a life-threatening emergency, and that hospital would look to see if they had insurance or not. And if they didn't have insurance, they'd say, go down the road and go down to the county hospital down there, or go someplace else because we can't pay for you. And basically, as a country, we said that we were not okay with that, that we didn't want that to happen. And so basically, if you accept Medicare and Medicaid as a hospital, which really almost every hospital has to do, then you have to have an emergency department, and you have to be able to do a medical screening examination on that patient, and you have to stabilize them to the best of your ability. What that means is being debated all the time in every patient interaction we have, as well as in court on a regular basis, but that became kind of the de facto law throughout our state. So after that became federal law, There's been conversation about what that means and what it doesn't mean, but it means that anyone can walk into the emergency department if they believe they feel like they're having a medical emergency. So it's defined by the layperson standard of a medical emergency, and I am required by law to do a medical screening examination and stabilize them to the best of ability. If we were to change that, that would require federal change. That's not something we could change in the state. And that is something that we could discuss as a country if we want to go back to that point where we did a wallet biopsy prior to treating people for an emergency. You know, those are conversations that we can have, and that's what's been done in other states. I personally never want to go back to that place. I chose emergency medicine because I can care for all patients. I don't have to ask about insurance. I'm okay with writing off some of my bill because I really believe in my oath to do no harm and to put the patient first. And so I personally think we need that law. I think we need a better system where primary care is easier to access, where we have integrated behavioral health, where we have complex care initiatives that be able to figure out better ways to care for these patients. And I think that will drive down costs and get better care.
Another question gets at this issue of does the 80% rule, is it affecting everybody the same, I guess, and I'm thinking more about on the provider side. So this question is, if the 80th percentile rule is nullified, will it drive family physicians out of business? How can we keep family practice physicians in business without this protection? And being a pediatrician, and I'll defend family practice pediatricians and psychiatrists, as I'm not sure the 80th percent rule gives a damn bit of difference to me one way or the other. It's directed at other people. Is this going to affect primary care if we get rid of this rule?
I believe it will. Again, we've never done a study to look at how it would affect it, but I could tell you that Physicians for Fair Coverage have looked across the country, and the psychiatrists as well as family practice docs have signed on to saying that the balance bill, the out-of-network balance billing should be 80th percentile. So when this has been looked at numerous other groups, including psychiatry, family medicine, and behavioral health, they have said that for out-of-network, it should be set at 80th percentile of geographic. So I think it's gonna set it because it just doesn't, even though this is the minimum, that drives down what insurers state they'll be willing to have you in as in network.
I would argue actually the opposite. When you look at like the 80th percentile for family practice, it's in the 200 percentile and below range. So I don't think that repealing the 80th percentile, and if you put something in like I talked about it, like 200 or 300% of Medicare, family practice would not be affected in any way.
I really, myself, am not clear what effect this 80th percent rule has, but my way my mind works is two things. I like when Ann says we got to have some evidence, because that's what physicians deal. We need some studies, not people's opinions. And the one thing that has been said tonight that I was going to ask, and I think, Ann, it was you who said something about it, if the 80th percent rule has been a driving factor, then we ought to be able to tell what was happening to costs of providers prior to the beginning of that law in 2004 and what's happened since. I understand that there may be differential changes depending on the practice, but overall, we ought to be able to see if that is a significant issue.
Could I say something?
Yeah.
Actually, the State Department of OMB has recently signed a contract with us to do that analysis.
Okay.
We've just started it, and we're hoping to present it mid-legislature. And using essentially the analysis that Dr. Zink mentioned, that is looking at what happened in Alaska versus what happened in other states from 2004 to the present. I don't want to prejudge those results, but the state has recently contracted with us to do that research.
And so that seems to me a very important bit of information if we're trying to make that decision as to whether or not the 80% rule is a significant factor in the healthcare costs. That makes sense?
I was at the session when Charles Wolfrath pointed out that Alaska's been unwilling to spend funds to do the research necessary to answer those questions. And as someone who does the research, it's in my interest to do the research, to be honest. But we can do other kinds of research as well. And I agree. I think that sorting out exactly what is driving this, rather than having it made by opinion, would help us a great deal. I'll be honest. I'll make a quick guess. I think we're going to find that the 80th percentile did not cause all of the increase. That strikes me as being, and some insurance companies have claimed that, and I find that pretty wild. On the other hand, I think it's probably likely that we're likely to see that there's been some impact. I think there's some reasons. It has certainly affected the market. Another thing I'd say, though, is, and I think actually Julie mentioned this, that there's been a change in the last, I'd say, 18 months to 2 years. There's a quirk in the 80th percentile rule that doesn't cover self-insured people. So that would be the university, the state, many large employers. And for whatever reason, this piece is a little obscure to me, but those insurers acted like it did. Recently, they have figured out it doesn't cover them, and so they've been more aggressive. And what's more important is that the two big, remember, there are two big payers in this state. It's Aetna and Premera. There are quite a number, large number of other players, but those two count for 80% of what the, 90% of what the state pays, and I would suspect it's still 75 to 80 statewide. Aetna and Premera both administer self-insured plans and insure plans. So they are in the position now of going to out-of-network providers and saying, you know, I've got these self-insured people who don't have to play by the 80th percentile rule, and if you want to be in my network, you have to do something else. And that, I think, is having some benefit over on the insured side as well, which is a way of saying not that the 80th percentile rule become irrelevant, but I think it is gradually becoming less relevant than it was, let's say, 3 years ago. The question that many of us ask, though, is, so why did the self-insured people play by that rule for so long? And I've heard different answers, but I think it is now becoming, at least the perception I have, is it is becoming a leverage point in the market.
I have a couple of thoughts on that. First, as you think about how the oil price has come down and the smoke has cleared and all of a sudden we have costs and we have people we need to insure and nobody really has any skin in the game. And I know there were plans that had $500 out of pocket for the year, you know, in Alaska, you know, in large supply, and that in itself creates a different behavior on behalf of consumers. So I do believe that change is afoot and that being able to leverage that legislation is going to be important, but there's a balance. Because I can also tell you as a hospital administrator, there's still a supply and demand issue with physicians. First example I'll give you is at primary care physicians. We have a lot of great physicians, and them willing to take Medicare and Medicaid, especially in the Anchorage Bowl, is not there. Some will take, you know, they'll take a few of them, but most of them turn them away. And that's why my senior clinic in South Anchorage has about a 10-week waiting list for a new appointment. That's significant. And so when you start talking 200% of Medicare, 300% of, I don't know where that number lands, but we still have a problem in that area, and we have a silver tsunami coming if we talk about the aging of Alaska. So that brings me great concern. And we also have specialties that are still not fully covered. We have groups that are covering the entire state, and you're increasing services out in Matsu and in Soldotna, and there's Fairbanks and Anchorage, and they want access there in your home community so you can save that life. There aren't enough specialists for all that. And access comes at a cost. And that's the problem we have to balance. And back in 2010, as I believe, we were still in a growth mode and access was what we wanted to create. And now we're in a situation where we want it, but we don't necessarily like the price tag. I believe that there is going to be some changes that comes with the leveraging of populations and such. And there'll be some moderation, but we're never going to be Seattle. And you will lose physicians, you will lose hospitals, especially in the outlying areas if you go too close to the bone. And then you'll be visiting family members in the lower 48 when they have critical care.
I believe this question or comment or educational comment is from a physician, although I don't know for a fact, but it says, over the years, I have often wanted to lower charges to selected patients or to write off the charges completely, but I've been cautioned that insurance companies might consider that fraud. Medicare will not allow us to see some patients for free. This tool to lower medical costs seems forbidden to us. That's my understanding also, is if I see a Medicare or Medicaid patients, I must see everybody at the same rate. Anybody want to make any comments on this statement?
I'm not an administrator.
It is my understanding that if you accept Medicare or Medicaid, you can't give a price lower than than that, unless you have a self-pay situation, circumstances that you can draw the reason for it behind, but you can't just do that routinely.
How does the issue of consumers going out of state or out of country for Medicare or for medical care impact either the 80% rule or medical subspecialists in this state?
So I just wanted to make a quick comment about that. I mean, I think that we're going to get to a system where certain things are going to be really need to be done in certain places in the lower 48 where they're doing everything. I had a cardiac procedure done, and I did it at a place that's the only thing that they did because we didn't do it in the state. And I think that there's some of that that's reasonable, and we can't expect all care to happen up here. I would argue, on the other hand, that when patients come into the emergency department and their knee is infected from a joint replacement that they had done in the lower 48 or in another country, and they want follow-up for care from that, they're not getting follow-up care in the state for that. That surgeon needs to see that person back. And insurance companies have really said, well, I'm only going to pay for 6 weeks, or I'm only going to pay for a year of that follow-up care in that place, in that other place. And so then the patient's just bouncing back. We've had patients showing up to emergency departments saying, I'm supposed to get this neck fusion surgery done, but I need a doctor here to follow me up. ER doctor, will you sign off? And the ER doctor's like, no, I cannot. And they're like, no one else could do it. So I think that there's some role for travel medicine in the sense that, you know, having subspecialized care where you need to be doing the same procedure at one place on a regular point. I think that emergent life-saving things, and I think we really need to talk about the complication and making sure that you realize if you go out of state to get care, that you have follow-up care when you come back because you could be stuck without a provider.
Another question, and it's one that I'm not really clear about either, and Julie, I guess this is going to go to you, and it relates to the question of does the 80th percentile rule apply to hospitals as well as to physicians?
Honestly, it really doesn't play into my world. We are contract, well, first of all, as I said, 70% of our payers are federal, and they choose that price or state, and then we negotiate our rates with the insurance plan. So to get the network, we go for the rate, but the 80th percentile hasn't been a factor for us.
Julie, again, the South Anchorage Medicare Clinic has proved that at minimum it costs 200% of Medicare in Alaska just to break even. How would reducing the fee for that level not impact patient access in Alaska?
That's the truth, right? So I lose about $1.5 million a year on that clinic serving that population. And it's not going to help. You know, I mean, we do it because it's the right thing to do. We need a place to discharge patients to, but operating in the federal payer environment is always at a loss, always. And the state is barely a break even.
I think what I'm going to do now is in this portion of the program, I do want to comment that in my reading about, and again, this gets to the single payer, Keep in mind, one of the problems is when the government or a single payer is involved in paying, they have all the control over what's going to happen, and they have the incentive to try to keep everybody happy. But they also, especially if it's the government, they have the legislators who like to get reelected, who like to promise tax breaks, which decreases the amount of money that's going to many different processes. So we have to be a little careful. Is maybe that's why there's a big difference between, what I'm getting at is not trying to make a value decision, but why there's a big difference between Medicare and the private insurance rates. That's one of the reasons, it would seem.
One thing I do want to put a little asterisk on everything I've said tonight is that the 80th percentile is one piece of the puzzle. There's never one silver bullet for fixing healthcare. I have 10 other bullet points of things that are creating the high cost of healthcare in Alaska, and so the 80th percentile is just one of them, and I like the spirited debate.
Feel passionately about the issue.
I just wanted to make a quick comment, and I think Dr. Zink had actually referenced this as well. You were talking before about wanting cares in the communities, and we don't have enough specialists for this. We know, and one of the things that I think we actually do have good evidence that can control top cost is really investing in primary care. And so right now we talk about, you know, people can't survive on just the reimbursement by Medicare, but we also know that Medicare does not prioritize primary care at this point as far as reimbursement. And so I think that there's a much larger conversation that needs to have, that we need to have, to how to keep people out of the emergency room by getting them connected by the, with a family physician, with an internist, so that we can catch these early diseases before they become emergent.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's my understanding also, because as I mentioned the previous thing, we're a patient-centered medical home, and the idea there is if patients have a home, they would be coming to us, we would help manage them and help do everything we can to keep them into the appropriate level of health care, which is another kind of issue I think you're also saying at the same time.
And maybe even manage that septic joint if it isn't, you know, yep, something that needs to go back down to the state. So.